going on out there, everybody. And thanks again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And as always, sitting beside me is mi amigo, Filio Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here back from the coast. We had a good time, our family vacation spot. We always go to Galveston. And just enjoy. We rent a beach house. It's not our beach house. Unfortunately, we don't own it. But, you know, we rent a beach house every year. And it was more expensive this year than it ever has been before. I guess they're blaming it on Corona like everything else.
The Rona. Yeah,
we had a good time.
You stayed out of trouble. That's always
a plus. We went fishing. Yep.
Nobody got hit by a stingray this trip.
Nobody got injured at all. We just had a really good time. The boys. So this year when we went there, we always go fishing with the same guy. His name's Brad. He's really cool. If you're ever taking your family down there and you want a good captain, just holler at your boy and I'll put you in contact with him. But we've been going fishing with this guy for like 9 years and he always does a good job. He's from there. He knows it like the back of his hand. So we've never been and not caught anything. So this year we were on the dock and we were getting ready to go. And I guess Shark Week was a little early this year because normally it's when my birthday is. Mm-hmm. It happened early. So I guess the boys were in a shark kind of mood because they said, we want to catch shark. So that's what we did. We caught a bunch of bonnet heads. We caught a hammerhead and we caught a black tip. And so it was a whole big family. So somebody in Delise's family, which is my wife, had a trophy made with a big fish on it, like a marlin. And it was like best fisherman. So on Saturday, all the girls went and all the guys stayed. And then on Sunday, all the guys went. Well, of course, the girls came back. They were full of themselves. Delise caught a big bonnet head shark. She thought she was a shoe-in. But the rest of the stuff they caught was kind of small. Well, we went out. We caught seven bonnet head. We caught a great hammerhead. We caught black tip. And as you would normally guess, Caleb won the trophy because his weighed the most.
Why am I not surprised by that? It's the universe's way of keeping him lined out. He loves fishing.
Yeah.
Now tell him what the guide told you.
Okay. Yeah. So we are on the boat. And of course, he knows my son. And he goes, Caleb, let me see the scar on your foot from when the stingray barb went all the way through his ankle. And I don't know if I ever posted those publicly. Maybe I should post those on my Instagram. But anyways, last year when my son was down there, he stepped on a stingray while surf fishing at night and the barb went completely through his ankle. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so he had a scar. But last year when he went fishing, he caught a big stingray the day before he got stung by a stingray. So I was always joking that they were getting revenge, right? Mm-hmm. So this time Caleb caught that black tip shark and we had it in the cooler. And Caleb was going to bend down and try to rub its belly. I don't know what he was doing. And the captain was like, no, don't touch that. Yeah, give it a little bit. That sucker will bite you. He goes, don't you remember last year you caught a stingray and then you got hit by a stingray that night? He goes, now you just caught a big shark. You better not call me tomorrow and tell me that a shark bit you or I'm never taking you fishing again. He goes, just leave it alone. So we thought that was a lot of fun. But yeah, we had a good time. I didn't get that sunburn like I normally do. So most of the time, I don't know why it is. I'm like, I'll put sunscreen on later. Then an hour goes by and you're like, I'll make sure I put some sunscreen on. The next thing you know, it's too late. You're done burned.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I was good this year. I had a neck gaiter on the full regalia.
Stay covered.
I was fine. Have you ever, because you're a guy that has a thinning hair.
Mm-hmm.
You ever had the top of your head sunburned?
More than once, because I've shaved my head since I was 18 years old.
Is that not the worst?
I've had water blisters as big as quarters across the top of my head, dude. It is horrible.
Top of your head or top of your feet?
Yep.
Or two places, yep. Dude, it sucks.
You can't lay your head on the pillow. No, you can't do that. You just have to sit there like, man, I'm stupid. Now you see when we went and played disc golf that last time, I had the big hat on.
Yeah.
Dude,
yeah.
I wear long sleeves, lightweight long sleeve fishing shirt, and a big fishing hat and shorts. That's how I play disc golf in the summer down here, so you don't burn up.
Right. Well, I'm sure everybody's sick of hearing about my stories and accolades. I hope everybody out there is having a good summer.
Yeah.
I know school's about to start up. In fact, some of the kids around here, I saw Godley, they already started on Monday.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we still got two or three more weeks before our boys go back. But
I got 2 weeks to go kick my daughter out at CSTAT. She'll be going to A&M, so I got 2 weeks to move her down there.
I got you. Well, I got a whole bunch of A&M, like hoodies and stuff that Jacob probably can't fit no more that I'll just give to you. Because I won't ever wear it.
The hand-me-downs. Here we go.
Yeah, well, speaking of going, let's go and read some news. Check this out. This comes from a listener named PW. It says, in October 1972,
hey now,
my husband and our two babies, my brother and I, left Leavenworth, Kansas in our 1968 Volkswagen van.
Isn't that where you spent some time in prison?
On a camping trip to a recreational area in Arkansas called Beaver Lake. Now, when we finally got there, we found a fairly remote campsite at the far end of the park. We wanted to be alone as the babies woke often during the night and needed to feed. We didn't want to disturb any of the other campers. Well, shortly after pulling into our campsite, my brother pitched his tent next to the van. The rest of us were going to sleep in the van. The campsite was in an area with a horseshoe-shaped, rocky, terraced ledge that rose from around 50 feet to around 100 feet as it curved around behind the four campsites. Because of the mature trees and the thick brush, daylight had trouble poking into our spot. Now fast forward to that night. Sometime around 3:30 a.m., I heard some animal sounds on that ridge that I thought were being made by coyotes. The babies were asleep, and all was quiet otherwise. I peered out the window, but couldn't see what was making the sounds because it was so dark. Still hearing odd yips and howls, I laid back down on the back seat. Moments later, there was a huge crashing bang on the van wall right next to my head. My husband leapt up out of a full sleep. My brother bolted out of his tent and jumped into the van with us. We were all in a panic, looking in every direction, trying to see what just hit the van like that. My brother finally yelled that he saw something moving behind the van. We all turned, just in time to see a large shadow moving about 20 feet behind the van from left to right. After about 20 minutes had passed without any of us seeing movement out there, my husband and brother went out to inspect the van for damage but found none. When they then started hearing pounding steps coming from the brush about 50 feet behind us. The guys eased back into the front seat of the van. That's when my husband turned on the headlights and stepped on the brake pedal for a rear light. Instantly, there was a huge commotion. Uh-oh. He started the engine, and that's when in the glow from one of the headlights, we could see this hairy thing 10 feet away and coming towards the van.
Oh no.
As it got closer, its silver-tipped hairs glistened in the light. It had a grayish streak from its shoulders down its back to its buttocks.
It's showing me with my shirt off.
Right? The creature was walking on two legs, Cam, and was around 6 to 6.5 feet tall.
Not me.
It had a barrel chest and skinny legs. It never gave us a good view of its eyes, so I can't tell you what they looked like. I could, however, see the face was not ape-like. It was dog-like. Its ears had tufts or fur on top of them, and it was very human-like in its movements and general body structure. It moved smoothly and quickly around to the back of the van where it followed the base of the ridge away from us. That's when it let out a menacing huff and a low rumbling growl, kind of like a dog. Insanely, my husband and brother bolted from the van trying to get a better look at the thing. That's when a shower of gravel came at us. My husband and brother tore back into the van, burned up the road, getting us out of there. I kept looking out the back window, and they looked in the rearview mirrors, but none of us ever saw what it was again. It just didn't seem like a Sasquatch to me. This thing, it didn't look like the creature portrayed in the Patterson-Gimlin film or any other photographs I've seen over the years since our encounter. It seemed too dog-like in its face, and it was too slim in its body. I know that most people will think I'm a little crazy, and I don't blame them at all. This is the exact reason I don't tell others about that strange night. I think the two of you and most of your listeners will understand, and that's why I'm sharing it. We saw what appeared to be a werewolf. Over the years, I've heard more and more stories from other unfortunate people who have seen something similar. I don't know if that makes me feel better or worse. I still have a little PTSD. I have feelings like this to this day due to that encounter. Thanks, PW. I get what they're saying. Like, if this happened in 1972, of course, I wasn't alive then. But when I was a child, I never really heard of dogman encounters. Mm-hmm. And then you heard the one up in Thackerville and stuff like that. And it does seem like more and more have come forward. The Beast of Bray Road by Linda Godfrey, all those stuff. The Michigan. I remember the old VHS tape. It was a guy in an outfit. Mm-hmm. But it seems like, I don't know if the sightings are increasing or just more people are coming forward, but I do kind of understand what they're talking about is they've heard more and more people having these sightings. I don't know if that makes them feel better or not.
Yeah, I completely
agree. On one hand, you feel better because you're not crazy. Somebody else has seen something like that. But number two, you're like, uh-oh. Are there more lycanthropes walking around or whatever this is?
True. Very true.
I think that's the hardest part with any strange, unusual paranormal encounter is you don't want to tell people because you don't want them to think you're crazy. But when you hear other people that have had the same thing, it does kind of make you feel better because you got to think like, man, am I going crazy?
Well, you got to. Yeah, I think it does. I think it's good for everybody if you have something like that happen to put it out there to see from other, you know, put it online so you can see that you're not the only one. Because so far we've had tons and tons of messages and things sent to us to where, yeah, it may be unique to that encounter, but there are encounters that resemble that. So it's not like you're on your own completely, right?
Yeah.
Like you have something to go on. I'm curious as to when they said they got showered with gravel. So, I mean, it almost seems like, was it running? Did it drop to all fours and start kicking to run? Did it throw gravel? You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Wonder what that gravel, that whole thing was as it showered. Because, I mean, like, did it squat and scoop? You know what I mean? Like, you splash water? Did it scoop and sling gravel at them?
I think of just like when you see a cat or something trying to use the restroom, how they just dig and shuffle or root around.
Like, this thing is almost like they didn't see it. I don't know if it was throwing something to get them away or if it ran. I don't know. It's man, any of those like that, where it's like a werewolf, that stuff's just cool. It's just a very interesting thing.
It's a romantic idea to think that's a real thing.
Yeah, of course.
But of course, I would never want to see anything like that. No. Like, I straight up, if I saw a werewolf, I'm never going camping again.
No, yeah, I'm probably never going to. I don't even want to think about it.
You know what I think about it? When I'm walking to the stand and it's still dark out, that's when I think about it.
Or I think about it as it's getting darker and I'm watching the sun go down. Like, and then I start like,
I got a long walk and all I got is a stick.
No lie. Like when you're walking in the mornings way before, like an hour before daylight, and you're slipping into your stand, and I'm always like, it's waiting for me because it knows that I'm hunting in that stand, right? So it knows that people come to that stand. So it's waiting and it's using my stand as bait, just waiting for me to come in.
For whatever reason, I feel like a sense of relief once I make it to the stand, like,
whew, like you're safe up in there.
Finally got it. Yeah. But it's like just a goal achieved in your mind. Like, I'm just trying to get to it.
Hey, what are you, 15 foot off the ground? Like, you're not safe.
It's a werewolf. You can't climb up a tree. That's how I'm retarded.
I'm a dummy. Yeah. I'm dumb when it comes to, because I freak myself out.
That's the worst.
And I try to play it tough, like it's not going to happen every time. But every time I'm walking in, I'm like, bro, I think something's looking at me, right? And doing this and doing these stories has not helped. It's done nothing but made it worse.
I can tell you, like, I'm kind of new to the recurve game. If I had to save myself with my recurve, I'm in bad shape. Like,
you'd be better off just trying to fight them off with it like a stick.
Yeah, I might as well just take my quiver out and fall on it.
Take your string off the bow and hang yourself with it.
Yeah, it's not good, folks. Not good.
No, I would be better taking the limbs off, just using the riser as like a handle to beat something with. Yeah, exactly. I've got something here I think you're going to enjoy. I always say that, and surely enough you do, but we were just talking last week about central Pennsylvania and just Pennsylvania in whole being a very strange place, right?
It is, yeah.
Get a load of this. There was a gnome encounter in south central Pennsylvania. Now, this was an anonymous posting here, but it says that my family had a house with a long driveway that had a steep hill to the road. And one day, my dad drove my sister and I down to the bottom of the driveway to wait for the bus because it was running late. Now, I really had to go to the bathroom, so I figured I would have time to run back up to the house rather than wait to get to school. So I made my way up, and once I got to the top of the hill, I saw that the garage door was open, which was strange because I was almost certain we had closed it. And as I got closer, I saw something standing right in the front middle of the garage. And I finally made my way up to where I could see it. And standing there, I saw a gnome. It looked like a garden gnome, with the tall pointy hat, the beard, the boots, the belt. The only things that were different from a garden gnome were that the hat was blue and the gnome was a bit taller, maybe about the size of a small child. Now, not knowing what to do and not wanting to get any closer, I just stared at the gnome, and after a few seconds, he smiled at me and waved. Now, I did not believe that the gnome had any bad intentions, but I felt very uncomfortable, like he was not truly friendly. I walked back down the driveway where my dad and sister were waiting. It was the size of a small child, 3 to 5, maybe a little shorter, tall blue hat, buckled belt, brown boots, white beard. There were a few other times during the time that we lived in that house that I suspected the presence of fairies or other supernatural beings. Some of the things that led me to believe this happened before this particular experience. So while there was only a reputation to me and my siblings, it was still a reputation and was before this experience. Now, I have read many books on fairies, along with other supernatural creatures, and I think that it's fair for me to say that I know how to determine one from the next. That includes one type of fairy from another. From stories and research, reading and such, I know that gnomes are a type of fairy. I have also had other experiences with other things. I've seen some ghosts and even some aliens, I believe, and there are distinct differences between them. And as I live, I feel this certain type of feeling, like a vibe or an aura, with almost everything I do. And that's how my memories are kept as well. There's a different type of feeling to a fairy encounter versus like an alien encounter or a paranormal encounter. Fairy are creatures that live among us, but they are elusive. Many people do not believe in fairies on the premise that they are unrealistic, but I believe that they, along with their magic, are real, just simply too uncommonly seen for most people to believe in them. And that's where they leave it, is seeing a gnome that smiled and waved. Now, I like what they point out was that they didn't feel danger,
right,
but they just didn't feel like the little guy was trustworthy.
Well, they are commonly referred to as tricksters for a reason, right?
It works perfect that way, correct?
I think some gnomes are good, and I think that some aren't, just like with people, you know?
And I think the majority of them are mischievous. I don't think they mean any ill intent towards it. I think it's just fun for them because for them, it's a game. You finally see them. Like, I think they see us all the time. I think they are there all the doggone time.
Yeah, when your keys are missing, that's what it is.
Yeah, it's just something messing with you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I'm going to be discussing some real-life curses and the craziness that involves them, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. All right, y'all. I've been looking forward to talking about this ever since it jumped into my head watching an old movie. Just came across it, called 1408. And I'm sure some of you probably remember it. It's got John Cusack and Samuel L. Jackson, where he's in. John Cusack is like a paranormal debunker, and he goes into that room, right? And it's like a cursed room or something along those lines. And so that's what got me to thinking, because I remember as a child watching part of the movie Poltergeist, right? And then I remember hearing all these stories about it as a kid, about how bad it, you know, like the little girl that passed away, that was the main star in it, going down through all these things. But I didn't really realize it until I was looking at that. And it just crossed my mind. I'm like, you know, we've talked about curse objects, but what about family curses, or is there movie curses? Turns out there are. Turns out there's a lot of curses, if you will, that take place that I wasn't even aware of. Like, it's almost such a regular thing that we shouldn't be surprised when you hear the fact that maybe there's something tied to a family or to an heirloom or something along those lines that are causing problems throughout their lineage, as weird as it is. Now, I know everyone listening probably knows somebody or has themselves played Madden football, right? I mean, like, you're my age. You remember when Madden football came out and this whole thing on the video game console? Well, there was a curse I remember being tied to it. So I had to look into that. And of course there is. There's a lot of them that if you're on the cover of Madden football, people either end up injured, right? There's usually an injury involved, or your season turns to crap pretty much as it goes on. Like, it's not a good thing. Or some have even just completely fallen out of the limelight. And so go and look. Look, I'll shoot you a couple right now. Michael Vick, Vince Young, Brett Farr. There's several that have had some problems, right, that have been involved with being on Madden. There's a lot of injuries was involved too. It goes along with, like, I believe it was the Sports Illustrated covers too. They started talking about there were problems with it. So there's a lot of these sports curses, which, you know, a lot of people in sports – are very superstitious. You know, you always hear the stories about wearing the same socks, the same underwear, certain shoes. I got to have a shirt on under my jersey, all that, whatever it is that gives us some sort of solace or try to empower us in a way so we can feel that confidence, whatever it takes, right? It's a mental edge, and that's what you have to have. And so that's one thing. But an actual curse is something that is a whole nother level. Now, I alluded to Poltergeist. It's a great film, right? Like, it is a truly unique, creepy, just creepy all the way around franchise. But what's very strange about this is there were four of the cast members died in the 6 years between the first film and the third film, which could be pretty much anything, but that was cast members. They were also members of the crew behind the scenes that have passed away in very strange circumstances. Now, the cast members I'm talking about are the woman that played Dana, the oldest daughter. Her name was Dominique. Dominique was murdered. Her ex-boyfriend killed her in 1982. She was only 22 years old. He had strangled her and she went into a coma and ended up passing away from that. Now, Reverend Henry Kane, if you remember that, right? The flat bill guy, the dude's creepy, right? His name's Julian Beck. Well, he was actually diagnosed with cancer after the first movie came out, and he passed away in 1985 from stomach cancer. And he was actually shooting and you know, filming the whole time he was battling that in Poltergeist 2, which might allude to the other reason he had this kind of creepy look is maybe he knew, right? Like, he knew it was happening, and so he was had just kind of, you know, turned himself over to it. I don't know. Now, if you remember, Taylor in Poltergeist 2 is played by Will Sampson. He was 53 years old. He had passed away in 1987. He had had a heart and lung transplant and ended up passing away. So that could be something, of course, you know, from the past. We have no idea. But then we get to Carol Ann, right? The little girl, Heather O'Rourke, and she had passed away. She was 12 years old. She passed away in 1988. They thought it was the flu. Turned out it was a bowel obstruction. That's why she was holding a lot of fluid. You can see it in her face, and it was septic shock that ended up taking her life. She actually passed away on the surgery table, on the operating table. It was alluded to in that curse that the reason it had started like that is that the skeletons in the background that you see, in a lot, if not all, but in a lot of the shots where there are skeletonized parts, it was believed by the cast that they had been made by the special effects department. Turns out, however it happened, they were purchased and they were actual human skeletal remains. So real, whether you want to call them, I don't know, would you call that cadavers? I don't think so. I think cadavers is actually the body, correct? So it would just be the skeleton, but it was used. I don't know if it was medically, how they got it, where they got it, either way. So it is said that because of that, that is where they believed that it came from. They believed it so much so that they actually had a real exorcism performed, not a fake one. A legit priest came in, performed an exorcism on the set, trying to just clear out as much as they could. So if you're wondering why people acted the way they did on that show, and it looks like there may have legitimately been an evil dark force over the top of them. Another interesting one that I enjoy, if you can enjoy a curse, I just enjoy the story behind it, is Otzi, the Iceman. And you remember they found him up in the mountains, right? Froze. He had like 5,000 year old. He's got tattoos. He had a bow, all of this stuff. Seven of the people that found him involved in that all passed away over the course of 13 years, which, okay, is no big deal, right? People come and go. People pass away all the time. 13 years, you can lose a lot of people. Natural causes take a lot of them. That's not what this was. In fact, I don't believe any of them were natural causes. It seems like most were strange accidents. And when I mean strange accidents, now, granted, one was a blood disorder that took one of the people, but we're talking car accidents, avalanches, slipping and falling off of a cliff. So the Iceman. Some, if you go and dig, some even rank the Iceman right up in there with like the King Tut's tomb. Like they were like, that curse is that powerful. Now, why he would have been cursed, who knows? Who knows anything about it? It could have just been luck of the draw. Could have just been what these people do where they work. Who knows, right? But either way, there's several of them that was lost. Now, there is something that's very strange, too, when you start talking about objects, is paintings. There is a painting known as the Crying Boy painting. And it's a European painting. You can go and check it. It's all over, right? There's tons of them. And it is said that they believe that this painting cursed multiple families. That some have even speculated that this single painting and all of its copies, let's say the copies of its paintings, that it brought, here's the weird thing. It brought such heavy darkness that these houses, some of them burned up, some of them exploded from gas leaks, all of these things, which could easily be a coincidence. It would be like saying Coca-Cola has a curse or something because everybody has, you know, something like that. The mayonnaise curse, because there's so many in there. But the strangest thing is now they say all the time, we can't agree with all of the time, but what we can agree with is more than unusual amount. More than 50% of the time that these homes burned, they would find the paintings, the copies, right, of this Crying Boy painting. And it was still okay, like unburned. Now, not every time, but more than enough. Like I said, enough to make you really go, damn, that is really, really weird. So the story behind that is the painter that painted this claimed that he had made this painting of a wandering orphan boy whose parents had passed away in a house fire. He just, I guess, saw him, whatever. Now, that's strange, right? And it goes on, and the story goes on that this painter had been warned by a local priest that every time the boy was transferred into a foster home, you know, going through the system, that the house burned down. And so it could have been the boy was a pyro. I mean, there's a lot of different explanations, but apparently it happened more and more with this boy. So the rest of this part goes that the painter, of course, wasn't listening, right? I'm not having anything done to this, the whole deal. He brings the boy in and decides to do the painting, does the painting. The boy goes, and story goes that the artist's studio burned to the ground within the week of the boy being there. And so he was so distraught from this whole deal and believing it all now that you can't say cursed, but he just pretty much was like, don't, banishment. Is that, I guess you could use that, like, get away from me. Don't ever come back. Don't ever come around us again. There's just too much darkness involved in this. And then, like I said, afterwards, the painting, it's almost like it carries a double down, right, as it goes. You start talking about cursed lands. So we've got movie curses, video game curses. You've got curses of paintings. Now we have cursed lands, and we've covered this before. There's great videos online if you want to go check it out if you haven't already. But I urge you to check out anything that involves the Bridgewater Triangle, right? Bridgewater, Mass. It's the home of the Bridgewater State University, okay? And like we've talked about, it's a 200-mile area known as the Bridgewater Triangle. And if you look into that, it's madness. We've done stories about it. It is complete craziness. There is reports of Bigfoot, UFOs, swamp monsters, spirits, fae, pretty much any and everything you could possibly imagine that you could attribute to some creepy place. The Bridgewater Triangle has it all. It's like, you know, the trifecta, the whatever you want to call it. It's got them all, right? Like everything creepy it has in there. The story goes, and I'm going to try to remember this as best I can, but I believe it's the Wampanoag tribe in that area there in Hockomock Swamp, which has a name for like haunted area or spirit area, something along those lines. So the story goes, of course, that it was used in this area. Colonists come in, ran the natives out, killed a bunch of them, pushed them out of this area so they could hunt more. This was all during King Philip's War. All this went on. The settlers in this area started calling it the Devil's Swamp, right? Goes on. Now, don't forget, it was the Wampanoag war chief that lost his war belt, his wampum belt. And that's what ended up causing the whole thing between the colonial settlers and the Native Americans. And the whole place became cursed. And it's still a dark, dark, evil energy area there. It's strange, but it's held on. Just like we had talked about with Gettysburg. It's like there's memory, right, in the ground. The soil remembers this. Now, if you jump to Maine, if you want to, we'll say a swamp area here of Hockomock, right? Now we're going to jump into a mountainous area, Mount Chocura, and it's a beautiful place. If you want to go check it out, there's endless photographs. It may be one of the most photographed things that you could probably pull up as far as mountain ranges on the internet, really and truly. So, and I'm not even going to attempt to start pronouncing the names of these Native American tribes. There's no way I can do it, but I will tell you this. The letter P is used in just almost every one of them. So it belonged to a small group of, or I say, not really belonged, a small group of Native Americans that lived near, mostly there in Maine, lived near all this. They were the ones that named it, right? And so they named this whole thing. And then, of course, the colonials, the Europeans move in and they start settling these areas. And then they start working along with the Native Americans and working along with the fishing and the trapping. And they're going through this whole thing, right? So the main legend that leads to this curse starts back in 1720. And so it goes that there is a tribe, these people, and they become friendly with a family that lived in Tamworth. And their names, last names are Campbell. All right. And so this Chocura was the tribe. So this Chocura tribe was just like a little group, right? And so the Chocura trusted this family. And so the chief of that little group, he left his son there with the Campbell family. So they're, you know, he's like, you stay here, this whole thing. The story goes that the father, Mr. Campbell, his first name was Cornelius, would been basically trying to poison the predators. We could say they're coyotes, wolves, whichever, but he's trying to poison some predators to keep away from their herds. So he lays it out. And this is the way the story goes. He's mixed up whatever it is. He lays this whole thing out. Cornelius goes away or whatnot. The son, the Chocura, the chief, his son had eaten the poison, not knowing it was poison, and had passed away. So he returns. What does he do? He comes in, Mr. Campbell's gone. It's just the wife, the kids there. He's like, what happened to my son? This is how it all goes down. What's going on? Well, of course, Chocura flips, right? So he finds this whole thing has turned his world upside down. So he chases Campbell like it's, you know, all on Campbell, like Campbell did it on purpose. Campbell defends himself. Campbell shoots him. They get into a scuffle. More people have died. You know, Chocura, Campbell, there's a bunch of gone back and forth. And this is a great part of the story is that if there's a great part, Chocura climbs the mountain, gets up on this big peak. He's bleeding to death. He's dying. The story says that he screams a curse on the land, saying that may the Great Spirit curse you when he speaks in the clouds and his words are fire. Lightning blast your crops, wind and fire destroy your homes, the evil one breathe death on your cattle, panthers howl and wolves eaten on your fattened bones. That's pretty wild, right? So then it says as he's bleeding to death, he leaps from the top of the cliff edge there off into the valley. And that's it. His son's dead. His family's dead. He's dead. this whole thing goes that way. Now, of course, who knows what the story is? Who knows what he really said? I don't know if he had a scribe there. We know, you know, who really knows? This is probably just another one of the tales of someone telling the story and made it into romantic, right? It's a very romantic tale. The rest of the story goes that a few years later, 2 or 3 years later, Mr. Campbell, the man that had shot him and all this, his found had been attacked and eaten, partially eaten, rather, by wolves. So kind of like this whole thing. And it is also said that cattle in the area and the Campbells could never have cattle, that their cattle were always, you know, being picked off, being killed, dying. The whole area was just not a healthy place to raise cows. So then we jump forward to maybe there's, you know, people casting curses on other people. Now, I don't remember this because I was extremely young, but I do remember hearing about it later on in life and then seeing it, I believe, on Cold Case or one of these, you know, police crime shows. But back in 1983 in Amarillo, Texas, there was a nun named Sister, I'm going to mess this up too, Tadia, I believe, or Tadia Benz. She was 76 years old, and on Halloween, she was killed. There was a lot of other things done. We're not going to go into that, right? It was just horrible. What happened to her was horrible. And there was apparently an overwhelming amount of evidence left at the scene. And there was a witness in the area said that they had spotted a man hiding behind some trees and that this man was very dark skinned and that he'd been around the Covenant at this time. But the police didn't really have any leads to go on. Well, of course, the people are going crazy. They can't believe an elderly nun, this happened to her, and what happened to her. So what do they do? Of course, again, this is 83. This is one of those deals. They start looking around the crime scene and they find a man named Johnny Frank Garrett. And at the time, Johnny was 17 years old. He was mentally handicapped rather severely. And of course he had lashed out things that, and they said, oh, he's violent. He's violent. You don't really know. It's an easy thing to do one side or the other, right? To easily cast that speculation. We're not going to. All we know is he was a mentally handicapped young man, and the police, from pressure of the people in the town, decided this is the one and this is what we're doing. And so they cuffed him and took him there to the station. And nobody really knows from that point on exactly how it went, other than it sounds to me, if you read on some of it and watch, is it's more like a railroading. They gave him a public defendant who was really not good at his job. And pretty much the defendant told Johnny and his family, you need to just give up. They have everything. They have everything they need. All the evidence. It's over, right? You're going to prison for the rest of your life if they don't kill you. Not wanting to look at anything other than maybe there's something else to it. This was just easy peasy. This is what they're doing. So the evidence that they had stacked, in air quotes, against Johnny turns out was all fabricated. They put it all together. They brought it in and they made him write a full confession. And in the full confession, nothing really lined up to the crime scene. Everything that he had tried to write to make whatever it was that he was trying to appease them to do, none of it added up. And the evidence that proved that none of it added up somehow vanished, right? They basically constructed this case. They brought Johnny to the courtroom. He was tried, he's convicted, and they sentenced him to death. Now, all of this at the time, they said, was because of a very corrupt police department. And they said what made it so scary was how efficient they worked at being able to cover their tracks, to build this evidence and to put him in, and that they knew that the way it had worked, the family had seen it, all this stuff. They know that the police department at the time had done it before. And of course, the legal system in Texas, you know how it is. We don't really give you a second chance. You mess up down here, we're going to kill you back. That's pretty much the way it goes. And there has been a lot of fault to that, admittedly. This is one of those things. So they put Johnny in jail, lock him up. He's on death row. 9 years. 9 years he's on death row. People are appealing his case right for him. They're like, come on, you can't. They try. At the end of this all, Johnny's last words, it says, I'd like to thank my family for loving me and taking care of me. And the rest of the world can kiss my ass, is what Johnny said. Now, years later, and I don't know how long, but years later, people start coming forward. Evidence starts surfacing that Garrett was 100% innocent. In fact, they found out that the person that had killed Miss Nunn, I'm horrible at trying to pronounce her name. Tadea? Miss Benz. Let's say Sister Benz. The person that had killed Sister Benz was a Cuban, I guess you could call him a refugee, and that he had actually had a criminal record in MO that fit exactly what had happened to Sister Benz. It had happened in Cuba. So, and here's what's even crazier. He was actually questioned by police and let go because they had set their sights on Johnny, right? So Johnny sits on there for almost 10 years. He's on death row, saying he's innocent, denied any of this stuff. Nobody, right? Everything. Everybody just wants to see him die. They think all this stuff. So the story goes that Johnny wrote a letter to the state and to the media and telling them how much of a turd they really were, basically telling them they were all frauds. And what's really interesting is he wrote a curse. He actually cursed them, not like, you know, creepy Latin words, which I don't know why it's got to be Latin. But anyhow, he actually wrote a curse to these people, wrote it all out, saying with all their names, he listed their names. And at the end, he said, each and every one of you will get what you deserve. So we fast forward to Miss Novella Summer. She was a juror. She fell down a flight of stairs, just randomly fell down a flight of stairs, killed her. A couple of days later, she's in a coma. She died from it. There was another juror, the last name is Shackelford, Nathan Shackelford. His daughter ends up getting killed by an accidental gunshot. And then his sister is killed by a drunk driver. And the trial lawyer for Johnny, whose name's Bill Collis, he died, rather, of cancer. Cancer got him. His first appeal lawyer was named Bruce Sadler. All right? And get a load of this. His post-conviction trial judge was named Sam Kaiser. Both Bruce and Sam came down with leukemia. Yeah. Now, Kaiser ended up dying after being allegedly cured. Said his healthy bone marrow that was collecting all this stuff completely disappeared from the case. Get a load of that. They collected what could save him and lost it. Can't find it. Gone. Another person there that was on the case named Jimmy Boldston died from leukemia. One of the officers involved in the case named Walt Yerger died of leukemia. Yeah. There was a reporter that covered the case for NBC named Kathy Jones. Kathy died in an airplane crash. And then the medical examiner, Ralph Ederman, who, of course, was convicted of multiple felonies of falsifying autopsy reports. They took his license. He was sent to prison and his wife died of pancreatic cancer. It doesn't stop there, folks. There was another officer, last name of Patterson, died in his vehicle. There was a jailhouse snitch who testified against Garrett with the last name of Watley. He ended up killing himself while in prison. Now, lowest of the blows, it feels like a school teacher named Carol Moore was Johnny's school teacher. She came up as a character witness and testified against him. She later committed suicide. The district attorney, Danny Hill, killed himself, and his daughter did also. And then one of many of the appeal lawyers that worked, trying, I don't know if you could say was trying to help, but that worked for Johnny, named Jeff Blackburn, his wife committed suicide. and his son ended up dying from brain damage from being locked inside a hot car. Yeah, exactly. And then those of you that are in the know and remember some politics from Texas years and years ago, Miss Ann Richards, well, she was involved in this case too. And they believe that she helped cover it up. And it was one of the many that Ann may have been involved in. Well, if you don't remember, Ann Richards came down with cancer not once, but twice. And the second time, she struck out. And she died from esophageal cancer. So, Jimmy had a lot to say and a lot on the list. And that list got thinned down. And it makes you wonder. It makes me wonder. And I'm going to leave you with this. Back in July of 2012, the Queen of Thailand, right, she had a stroke. Wouldn't be odd, right? No big deal. She had a stroke. She's out of public eye. That's the way this happens. People get older. They're everybody that has a royal family in their country, no matter what it is, it's part of pop culture. You keep up with these things. You keep looking into these things. Everyone wants to know. I mean, we see it going on with the royal family here. I mean, we see everything happening all the way around. And so that wouldn't be a big deal, right? She had a stroke. That's the way that things happen. But there is another little part that ties into that. And that little part is a fact of one of the wildest jewelry heists you could ever hear of. Now get a load of this. Back in 1989, at the palace of the Saudi royal family, there was a janitor that worked there. This janitor was Thai. And the story goes that he had worked around there and he had found a lot of jewelry, saw where it was all at, so he broke into the prince's room. And in there was a prince pile of jewelry. So the janitor packs it all away. He packs it all away in a vacuum cleaner bag, stacks it inside the vacuum cleaner bag, puts it in the vacuum cleaner. He takes his gear. He heads home. $20 million worth. Among all this, they say that there is what the Saudi prince claimed was known as blue diamond, and it's a 50 carat diamond. So after he leaves, the Saudi authorities go crazy. They go through everything. They call the Thai police. They get hold of all this, let them know what happened, who the person is. They get him arrested, gather him up. But by the time they caught him, everything was gone. He had sold some of the gems on the black market, other stuff. He had traded things here and there. But he had some, not all, but, some. And so it got returned to the royal family, what they could find. Except the really strange part about this was half of the jewels were fake. And the blue diamond was missing. Now, they don't know if it was fake before it was stolen. Like, did he steal fake stuff? And the Saudis had been taken for a ride before. And he didn't find out. The Thai man didn't find out until he tried to sell it. Or had he already swapped it all out? And he still had it hidden somewhere. We're not really sure. But what we really are sure of is the blue diamond wasn't there. And what's really funny about that is that the police department kind of leaned more towards the fact that it never really existed. That maybe the Saudis were trying to get to the Thais. You know how this goes. You can already see the way this is playing back and forth. Is like, well, if you don't have pictures of it and you don't have an exact list of, I mean, how are we supposed to know? It's like saying your car got stolen, but it had 6 bricks of gold in the trunk, right? Like, oh yeah, there was gold in there too. We don't really know. So this has never really truly been proven to exist, right? Never definitively that the blue diamond was real. But that suggests more that it was cursed, because back in February of 1990, 3 Saudi diplomats who had gone into looking to try to find out about the whole jewelry thing, right, and to try to find this whole deal, were found shot execution style, side by side, all the same night, rode up and killed. Now, the Thai police went on to say that there's no proof that the murder was related anyway to this blue diamond. So the Saudis are in Thailand. The Saudis are looking. You find them killed execution style. They don't know what's going on. The Saudis are like, look, we think y'all are covering something up. Goes on. It's reported that the wives of some of the Thailand's most powerful men in this area, some of their underbelly, had seen or had been seen wearing jewelry that fit the description of the missing gems and jewelry from the Saudi prince. Now, strangely enough, there was even a sighting of the alleged blue diamond. And the blue diamond was said to be on Queen Sirikit, who is the one who had the stroke. It's believed that she was seen wearing something very similar to that gem only maybe a week before she had her stroke and disappeared from the public eye. So many in the royal family and many of the people that follow these curses believe that she might have been one of the last few. We don't know if it was returned. We don't know if they still have the blue diamond. We don't even know if it was real. But that is a list of some very strange, and that just scratches the surface of the curses that are all bouncing around out here in the ether. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed looking into the curses. There's a whole nother list of curses I'm going to be getting into too. So I'm going to try to pump that out. I'll throw that on the Elite Show some. All right, folks, let's take a quick break and we'll get back. We'll wrap this baby up. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. I hope you enjoyed those. We covered a little bit of everything, you know, cursed paintings, cursed jewelry, pretty much cursed places, everything. And there's so many more to get into, but it is a very unique thing to think about is all of these stories of curses throughout all of time on the objects, on the people, on the land. Yet there still seems to be some validity to it.
I agree.
And I don't know if it's just us as human beings trying to find a category and we use it and we use circumstantial evidence, you know, as we,
yeah,
as we build it up to like, that's why, and all those deaths are attributed to it and all this. I don't know if that's it or if it's just pure happenstance, but I do know just in our friend group, none of us have been cursed and none of us have died. But when you look at other places that you work,
wait a minute, don't go so far. I know a fella or two that seems like their life is cursed. There's a black cloud just hanging over them. Yeah, but
they don't die.
No, they're not dead.
It's just a miserable existence.
Nothing seems to go right for them.
Yeah.
But you know, in all seriousness, when people are like that, it's because they make dumb decisions. It's not a curse. It's because they don't make good decisions.
Some of our friends don't make. But what I'm saying is like they weren't cursed.
Yeah, no.
These curses really do seem to, and what's weird, they really do seem to tie in, but what's really so strange to me about them is it's not like you have to be cursed. It's almost like the universe and karma has a way of coming back around and getting a hold of you. Some of these curses seem like it's that.
The Texas Rangers are cursed.
Oh, that is no joke. And we're cursed for actually having them stuck here.
Terrible, terrible. Speaking of baseball, I'm a little bummed out this week. The Cubs have been totally dismantled.
They traded
all their players away. Let's see. Anthony Rizzo, he went to the Yankees. Javier Baez got traded to the Mets. Chris Bryant got traded to the Giants. They dismantled the whole team.
That's what the Rangers need to do.
They need to do something.
They need to close up, take a year off, reevaluate, start again fresh. That's what they need to do.
I think they're literally like one game ahead of the worst team. So they're the second worst team. But they got a new stadium.
And the only reason nobody went the first time is the air conditioning, right?
Well, that's what they claim. People don't go to their games because it's too hot. No, they don't go to the games because they're terrible.
Because they're trash. Look, folks, we're not talking about sports, right? Sorry. Yeah. Kyle and I get mad about this whole time. We're not getting into that whole thing. I do have something, though, I want to share while we're here doing this. Kyle and I, of course, y'all know we've been playing Dungeons & Dragons, and we got lucky to play with another fella that's an awesome DM. And I'm going to go ahead and shout him out right here. If you want to check out some of his stuff, I'm going to post it up in another video too. But his name is Benjamin Palmer, folks. And if you go to AdventureAwaitsStudios.com, you can pull that up. That's his website. If you're down with Dungeons & Dragons, he sells all kinds of adventures. He's got all the stuff you can do from all the way up from 0 to 3rd level, 5th level, up to like 7th, however you want to do it. And that is what he does. And he pumps out all kinds of content. And he's colonized Dungeon Master. We're going to be playing again Friday night with him. And he's amazing. So if you want to, like I said, it's Adventure Awaits Studios. So check it out because your adventure awaits.
Yeah. Tell everybody what your character, what are you playing this campaign? What
is
your character?
I am a halfling sorcerer named Callahan Underhill.
Right on.
And
right.
You are a what?
I am a wood elf druid.
There you go.
Named Talos.
Talos.
Yeah.
And I can tell you right now that some of the people in our campaign don't really have the same, they're all wonderful people, but they don't really have the same sense of humor, because Benjamin needed some information from all of us, and he wanted to know as we've leveled up our names and things like that, and he had forgotten Kyle's character's name. So he asked in our group message of everybody in there that, what's the name? And I quickly responded, his character's name is Douche Baggins. Kyle's the only one that laughed. I didn't get a thumbs up. Nobody responded to it except Kyle. So talk about awkward. So folks, when you think you're having an awkward day, be me.
Yeah. They're great people. They do take you very serious. I got kind of intimidated the first time. I'm like, I think this was like recreational. Like, I didn't know.
These people are smart.
I didn't know we were on Critical Role.
Dude, these guys are good. And
they are good.
Brittany, all of them. We have a female. Look, they're all smarter than us, which isn't hard to do. So yeah, it would be awesome to film it, because Kyle and I legitimately don't know what we're doing, and these people are awesome at it. So it's kind of a blessing that we get to do it all. So anyway, yeah, I may try to post some pictures if they're cool with it. We'll take some.
That's a good
while
idea.
We're out there and see, and we'll post some of them up. But it's funny, because I think it's one of those that they don't know how to act around us, because
I think that's what it is.
That's the way most people are. We've legitimately been friends with, you know, for so long that they don't.
Yeah.
What they take, I'm like, dude, you can't offend me or him, either one. No, like, we've tried to offend each other our whole lives. You can't do it.
You know, when somebody gets a good burn, I'm just like, ha, it's a good one.
Tell me, Douche Baggins isn't a great character name. Of course it is.
So. I almost bought that t-shirt years ago.
If it's still up, you need to do it.
The one I liked, where it's a two-person combo.
Oh, here we go.
It's
I know we're doing this one.
It's got a cannabis leaf on the front, but it's only half. Each t-shirt has a half of a cannabis leaf. But if you stand side by side and hug each other, it makes one complete leaf, and then it says "Best Buds" on it. And I was like, Cam, we need that t-shirt.
So I guess
just for the photo alone, right?
So I guess we're doing that too. Yeah. So
if you have a story you'd like to share with your two best buds, don't forget, do not hesitate.
Yeah.
Email the show expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can call the show 888-393-BRUD or 888-393-2783. You can follow the show on all forms of social media. If you want to help us out, don't forget to subscribe, rate and write the show on any of the podcatchers that you listen to us on. Be sure to tell your friends, families, colleagues, people about the show. The best way for a podcast to grow is through word of mouth, and go over to YouTube and subscribe over there. Even if you don't plan on ever listening or watching us on YouTube, we're trying to grow the channel. It's free. It only takes you a second, and it really helps us out.
And I'm going to be pumping out a few more videos. I broke the camera.
Yeah, that's why we haven't come out with any in a while. The GH5 Lumix is down, folks.
I don't know what happened. I plugged it in and it just quit working.
I was going to try to fix it myself. Like, literally, I got the tools out and was looking, and then I stopped. I'm like, what are you doing? You do not know what you're doing. I'm like, you're right. I don't know what I'm doing. Just send it off.
Yeah, so I had to.
Because then I'd have to explain to Cam, like, look, I tried it. There's 1,000 pieces here. I don't even know how to put it back together.
We'd have to throw it away and just be like, I guess that's it. So the guy called me and he told me he's going to have to end up sending it in to
Japan?
Panasonic or no. Wherever it is. Yeah, right. Wherever. Whatever. So we took it to a guy that was recommended by the Fort Worth camera and the whole thing. It's been great. But like I said, so I must have broke it really, really good. It's some kind of something. And it's a mirrorless, you know. And anyway, it's just one of those deals. So I have another one we're filming with. So we'll see how that works. But we are still going to pump out some more videos. And we've got some more unusual encounters, like a bunch. So they're fixed to start coming out with me and this knucklehead. So we'll start dropping those next week.
Sounds good.
Oh, should I tell everybody? Folks, It happened. I went and found a part-time job, folks, to get out of the house. Everybody's been giving me a hard time. I've been working on here. I'm now an official employee at a barbecue grill place. This place is a barbecue shop here in town.
I go there all the time.
Dude, it's so awesome. And they carry all these grills, and they needed a little part-time help, just like old man work, right? I'm just assembling grills and kind of moving stuff around and just pretty much being like a kid again. And it's pretty awesome, I'm not going
to
lie.
I can't wait to go up there and like try out the different rubs. And
dude, there's a whole bunch.
Yeah. I know. I go in there all the time.
Oh,
they got some, all the pellets for the pellet grill.
Yeah.
They got all kinds of cool gadgets. It's a dad hang, right? It's like a cool place for guys to hang out.
And we're talking, this is like 20 hours a week is what I'll be monkeying around up there. So I'm like, dude, it's perfect.
Sounds Excellent. Well, I hope everybody out there has a good week. That's about all the time we have. Till next time, I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.